A new survey from the Illinois Association of Regional Superintendents of Schools shows both short and long-term challenges to education in Illinois. This is Capital Cast from Capital News Illinois. Welcome to Capital Cast. I'm Jennifer Fuller. This week, the Illinois Association of Regional Superintendents of Schools released its annual teacher shortage survey, and a large number of school officials report large problems with teacher shortages. I talked about the report with IARSS Executive Director Gary Tipsord.
I think one of the important things to recognize is that the survey focuses on perception, right? So how people feel. So there's obviously some real data as far as classrooms that have unfilled positions or people that are not rightly certified, but they're filling a role on an emergency certificate or whatever. But a lot of this is about this sense as to what's it going to look like in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years if we don't address some things. And so I think what you're seeing in terms of consistency in the feedback from the field is a concern that we need to address long-term sustainable solutions. And so I think in particular, the consistency of the feedback that 90% have any concern is probably reflective of a forward-looking vision as much as anything. And obviously not to minimize the what we're trying to deal with right now, but I think it is clearly indicative of that looking forward.
As with so many things, this is a really complicated issue. There's not just one thing you can point to in terms of why there is a teacher shortage. We're looking at things like how many students are in the pipeline in college studying to be future teachers, teacher pay, burnout, other issues like that. If there was one way that you could describe that for people who are not a part of education, how would you describe that?
Yeah, so the pipeline side, so I think you have to look at it in two areas, right? So the front end, are we creating a supply that is big enough to meet the demand with enough volume that also incentivizes competition? Because then not only are you getting enough teachers and paraprofessionals, speech language folks, all of those pieces, but it's also competitive enough that we're getting the best that are filling these roles. So I think that is absolutely relevant, how we create this, the front end supply side. But then once people are actually in the profession, and I think you mentioned the concept of working conditions, and I think this is someplace where we believe within the regional offices of education and our ISCs, there are ways in which we can plug into the school environment that can both better understand the challenges created by working conditions, including how do people actually define what are these working conditions that are somewhat dissatisfying? But I think we can also plug in ways to help alleviate some of those concerns. And so I think when you look at this, you have that front side supply piece, but then once they're in the profession, how do we better understand the working conditions that affirm for the people working in public education, that they're valued, that they're appreciated, and that their work makes a difference. I think that's that area of focus for existing staff that we need to better understand and we need to be more attentive to.
It seems often that the way a lot of people say they want to be appreciated is through pay. And I know that the state is several years into the new evidence-based funding model where struggling schools are perhaps getting a larger portion of state funding in order to try and level that playing field. Is that helping?
Yeah, well, it's certainly helping. It's creating more predictability for school districts to build budgets because they know with the base funding minimum and the way that that's been conceptualized, that they know year over year what they can count on. But I think the other important thing to realize about EBF, where increasing teacher wages is clearly a factor and relevant in some places, it's not relevant necessarily in all. That we have some districts around the state that have very competitive salary schedules, but it does speak to the concept of working conditions. So what do the supportive services look like that make things better for our students and better for our teachers and our staff? What do class sizes look like according to the model? So the model not only provides resources for funding, but it also provides resources so we can design an educational environment that's better for our students, clearly, but also better for our staff that deliver those services. So EBF actually provides this comprehensive picture of what we can do. So the further that we move into that, the more we continue to fund that, obviously, the better we can create conditions that lead to better learning and hopefully more efficacy for teachers.
So for people who are not familiar with the educational environment, what do some of those things look like? Are we talking about school counselors, teachers' aides, you know, additional supportive measures? Or is it really boiling down to more teachers or better structures or things like that?
Well, I think all of that. I think it's a really comprehensive picture, because if I simply look at it through the lens of what EBF does prescriptively, so if I think of our funding model and what that delivers to our schools, it is also right-sizing your classrooms. So student enrollment, how many students should be in a class? How many counselors are needed? How many paraprofessionals are needed to deal with the unique environment in every unique school district in the state of Illinois? It's not saying that every building in every school district should look the same. What it is suggesting is that there's an optimal place for them to be and to be staffed and to have the right type of programming and support services for the students that they are specifically responsible to serve. And so the closer we get to optimal, it logic would suggest that they will function more effectively, they will function better, it'll be better in the interest of students, but also in a better interest of the adults that are working in that environment as well.
Two more issues that I wanted to talk about, and they both kind of look forward. First of all, what is it that the legislature can or should do in order to bring these environments into reality and make sure that some of these needs are being addressed?
I think the first is to continue to collect the data, to continue to use the survey that I anticipate we'll continue to put together on an annual basis. And then be able to have just honest, forthright conversations about what they think these implications are and how can we create solutions that at the end of the day are in the best interest of the students that we're responsible to serve, right? So actually being able to engage in honest, forthright dialogue about solutions, I think is critical. But I think the other piece, they've built in certain flexibilities that have allowed us to be responsive in the moment to the challenges that are in front of us, making some of those things more permanent in the structure so that school districts and even in our situation at the regional office level or the intermediate service center level, that there's some predictability that we know you can solve some problems in your classrooms a certain way, right? So more sustainability with that, I think, is important. And then at some point in time, we've got to look at how we provide structures for students that are in junior high and high school to begin to explore and aspire to positions in education. And again, you've got to build that front side supply issue, but how can we do that better and more effectively and create freedoms in our high schools so that those high school students that have an interest in going into fields of education have an opportunity to experience that while they're still 16, 17, 18 years of age before they're making decisions about going to college.
Finally, I wonder about the picture. Your survey has been going on for about 7 years now. If we were to look 7 to 10 years into the future, given the trajectory that the state is on right now, does the survey look very different in 5 to 10 years? Or is there something that people should be extremely concerned about when it comes to this teacher shortage?
Well, I think the attention that it's getting, the conditions are right for the trajectory to change. But at some point in time, there are people that are going to have to make hard decisions that will open greater doors of opportunity. They may have to build different systems than have existed before. And the willingness to do that isn't going to be easy. There's going to be some controversy that surrounds that. And so when you have a challenge that sits in front of you that's going to require that which is sometimes hard, there's got to be a willingness to do that. And so I think if there's not a will to begin to look at things a little bit differently and create new solutions to some of the challenges we see in front of us, I think it will probably look very much the same. But it seems to me that right now, with the attention given to this survey, when you see that the legislature is actually talking about bringing a working group together to really dig into this in a different way, I believe that the conditions are right for us to make the substantial changes and systems-based changes that are going to be required to solve this problem going forward. So I think there's a lot of reason for optimism because people, I think, recognize that this is a problem that it needs to be solved, it needs to be addressed, and it's going to take some work on some people's part.
Our thanks to Gary Tipsword, the Executive Director of the Illinois Association of Regional Superintendents of Schools. You can find more on their teacher shortage survey at capitalnewsillinois.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Fuller. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service covering Illinois government. Major funding is provided by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Additional support comes from the Illinois Broadcasters Foundation and the Southern Illinois Editorial Association.